Hello, everyone. Welcome along to the RotoViz Radio Draft Series. My name's Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. On today's edition of the Draft Series, we're going to be talking quarterbacks. And I'm going to be joined by Mark Schofield of InsideThePylon.com to discuss the upcoming prospects in this draft class. You can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Schofield, and we'll be talking to him in just a little moment. But first, I want to let you know about the 30% discount you can get on a RotoViz NFL pass. All you have to do is head on over to rotoviz.com/podcast. That is the podcast homepage, and you will be eligible to get that 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. For those of you who don't know, RotoViz is a sports data and analytics site that publishes over 1,000 articles per year and has a suite of more than 20 proprietary apps. So be sure and head on over to that page. That is rotoviz.com/podcast. Get yourself that subscription to rotoviz.com and, of course, save 30%. It's an awesome deal. Make sure to avail of it and get all the awesome content up there on rv.com at the moment. Also, you can support the pod by subscribing and rating the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes. If you do that, you'll be eligible to win a $35 entry into one of the leagues over there with our buddies at the FFPC. They are the sponsors of today's show, and I'll have more information about them coming up in just a little bit. But go to iTunes, leave that written review with a name in it, and then listen to one of the future episodes to hear if you are the winner. Also, if you're interested in being in an FFPC league with some of the RotoViz writers and podcasters like myself, like Matt Freeman, and the great team that we have over here, send us an email to rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'll get that league set up. Delighted now to be joined on the show by Mark Schofield. As I mentioned at the start, you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Nice and simple there. I love when the Twitter names are nice and simple and easy to find just when it's just the person's name. Of course, you can find his work on InsideThePylon.com. Mark, how's things?
Doing well, Colm. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Starting to get excited about the draft coming up now. I know you've been really digging into it for the last couple of months. I've been following your work, but obviously now it's really ramping up with the pro days and everything going on at the moment. So I'm excited to talk quarterbacks because, you know, everyone talks about franchise quarterbacks, getting that guy and getting the team on the right track. So I'm really looking forward to seeing your thoughts here. So when we talk about, just before we get into this actual class and the prospects as a whole, when we talk about, you know, year on year, sometimes we say it's a good year for quarterbacks, it's not a good year for quarterbacks. We've seen some really talented quarterbacks come out over the last couple of years. You know, we've seen a couple of them get far into the playoffs this season as well. So when you're looking at the last couple of draft classes, maybe even in the last decade versus this draft class, how good do you think this class ranks as a whole compared to those other years?
You know, I mean, I'm a quarterback guy, so I look at every quarterback class and I think that there's some good things about it. You know, I look back to the Winston Mariota class, and obviously that was a little bit of a thin group. You know, you had Winston, you had Mariota, and then really after that, there was a bit of a drop off. I think this is a pretty solid group. I think there's some good guys up top that can be franchise quarterbacks. I look at it as more of a big five. I think the NFL is looking at it as a big four. You know, the NFL really likes, you know, Rosen, Allen, Darnold, and Mayfield. You know, I would put Lamar Jackson in that group and make it a big five, but I think there's some guys that are outside of that group that are interesting as well. And we'll see a couple of guys, I think, come off the board probably earlier than we expect on day two, because quarterbacks will get pushed up the board a bit. And I think there are some day three prospects as well that are definitely worth keeping an eye on, some guys that in the right spot could develop into, you know, more than just, say, a backup quarterback. They could become starters in this league.
Yeah, and I know the further on in the draft you get, the less likelihood there is that these guys are long-term starters. But when we see guys like Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson over the last couple of years, just to name a couple, there is that possibility people, you know, are stepping up from further down the draft class. You mentioned the NFL looking at like a big four, and you're looking at like the big five. Obviously, you added in Lamar Jackson. I'm going to get you to rank the prospects now. Those five that you mentioned, so that's Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, and Jackson, you might have them in that order. You might have them in a different order. Somebody else that's also getting a lot of kind of pub over the last 2 or 3 weeks is Mason Rudolph. Have you him anywhere near those guys? And what's your thoughts on, I guess, those six as a whole in order that you would put them in at this moment in time?
Yeah, I mean, the way I come down on it is I have Rosen one, I have Baker, Mayfield two, Donald three, Lamar Jackson four, Josh Allen five, and Mason Rudolph six. And, you know, that's based on, you know, my evaluations of them on the field. I don't really factor in off the field stuff because for the most part, I don't get a chance to sit down with these guys. I can't pick their brains. I can't talk to, you know, them about different route concepts, different plays, different philosophies, different, you know, things that I would, if I could get the chance to sit down with them like the NFL coaches do, like NFL staffs do. That's how I have them. I think they're all talented quarterbacks. I could envision any one of those guys becoming a long-term starter in this league. I think the guy that I have at six there, Mason Rudolph, he might have perhaps the safest floor out of the guys in this group. He's a very experienced passer, basically a four-year starter at, you know, Oklahoma State. And I think he could go on to have an 8-10 year career as a high end backup in sort of his, if he reaches his floor. And so I think it's a good group. I would also throw Kyle Lauletta in at QB7, who I think will come off the board at some time day two. And I think he could also grow into a starter into this league. But more than anything that matters is for these guys is where they end up, the scheme fit, the coaching fit, the landing spot, how their development is handled, because with some of these guys more than others, they're going to need a nice little glide path to become a starter in the NFL. They're going to have the right environment, the right coaching. They might need to sit for a while to reach the potential and the quarterback that they could be. So more than anything, you know, how I rank them, how other people rank them, what matters more is where they end up and how people view them right now sitting here near the end of March doesn't matter. It's how they're handled by their coaches as they become NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's the thing that I always find is the intangibles that even at this stage, no matter what they've done in their career to this point, you know, getting drafted to that team, maybe it is a case where you do get that opportunity to sit. You know, we've all talked about Aaron Rodgers over the last couple of years, and, you know, he got the chance to sit behind Favre, and a lot of quarterbacks now, particularly if you go in that first round, don't get the opportunity to sit and to learn, and they're really cast in at the deep end, and some people flourish in that situation, some people don't. But you mentioned that Sam Darnold was your third prospect in this quarterback group, and when you're looking at how things are kind of being talked about now in media circles, it seems like the Cleveland Browns are looking at him with that number one overall pick. So do you see a big gap there? You know, would you think that's a smart move? Obviously, you would think that he shouldn't be the first overall pick based on the way you've ranked those quarterbacks.
Yeah, and part of the reason why I give the nod to Baker and to Josh Rosen over Sam Darnold in this group is because I look at Baker and I look at Josh Rosen, I think they're more scheme diverse right now, and I'd feel more comfortable with them playing earlier in their careers. I think Darnold might have a very nice ceiling to him, perhaps one of the highest ceilings in this group, but he's going to need some time. He's going to need some season, and he's going to need to develop a bit. I think when you watch Sam Darnold, what stands out to a lot of people are his mechanics. People look at his throw and motion. And while I'd like to see that tightened up a little bit, that doesn't worry me as much as his lower body, his feet, his footwork in the pocket, his footwork while he's throwing, his left foot, his left hip. He opens it up too soon. There are times when he steps in the bucket. And normally that doesn't bother me. Mechanics don't bother me. I've often said that, you know, mechanics, they're not a problem until they are a problem, and they've become a problem for him. You could see it on some of his interceptions when I broke those down for a video over at Inside the Pylon's YouTube page. The mechanics were an issue on a lot of his throws because when you step in the bucket, you lose velocity. When you're stepping away from your target, it impacts velocity. You see a dip there. You see a dip in accuracy and ball placement, and you could see it having an impact on plays. And so he does need to fix that. He does need to tighten that up. I have confidence that he will. Something that's important to remember with Darnold, he only started playing the quarterback position when he was a sophomore in high school. He's not like when I started playing football, I was playing quarterback when I was 9. By the time you get to be a sophomore in high school, a lot of that stuff, it's muscle memory. It's ingrained. It's forged in your mind. With him, he's not as experienced, which is a good thing because he can sort of unlearn and relearn some of the things that he's going to have to refine. We talk a lot when quarterbacks come out, Blake Bortles, Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes last year, about their mechanics. Some of those guys, when you've been playing it for so long, it's a lot harder to fix and course correct. With Darnold, there's going to be a little bit of an easier process, I think. I think he has a ton of potential. It's just I look at the other two guys, and I think they have a cleaner path to be able to play at a high level earlier in their careers. And that's why when I'm judging them sort of right now in the moment, I have those other two guys a little bit higher. And there are great things about those guys as well that we can get into, which have me a little bit more optimistic about their having an easier path to playing in the NFL.
Yeah, let's get into that. The interesting thing as well you mentioned there is Baker Mayfield. I think a lot of either people are very high on him or very low on him is based on, like, they're very high on him because of what he's been able to do and lead his team to success and have those moments in games. And then if they're very low on them, they're worried about his character and off the field concerns. And it seems to me that it's overblown and overhyped maybe either way, but you're looking at it just from the tape perspective, so you're just looking at it from that angle. When you look at it as well, do you take in the pro days. I've seen a lot of people then reacting to, you know, to Darnold's pro day, and, you know, people get the hype in behind it. Do you think that, you know, at this stage, your evaluation's done and you're really not looking any further? Obviously, it helps the teams to get that closer look at him on the day, but really at this stage, your evaluation should be done. I did tweet out that, you know, we looked at Teddy Bridgewater a couple of years ago and he had the bad pro day. We looked at the combine last year with Dalvin Cook, obviously as a running back, but people sometimes take the negatives off these and multiply them by so many times, and then you can miss out on that, you know, prospect who has the opportunity. Obviously, it hasn't worked out with Teddy Bridgewater with the injuries, but he did start off quite well in Minnesota. But do you have your evaluation done at this stage and aren't too concerned about the metrics at this point off pro days?
Yeah, I mean, my work's basically done, and with respect to pro days, 9 times out of 10 they really don't matter. There's that rare instance where you want to see a pro day because you want to see some sort of, whether it's development or refinement or something from a mechanical standpoint. And that's why, in some sense, Darnold's pro day yesterday, I think, did matter in a way. Because as I talked about, Colm, we're looking at him from a mechanical standpoint. I was curious to see, he's working with Jordan Palmer, his quarterback coach. And when they were posting videos of these workouts, whether it's Instagram or Twitter, you could see that they're more concerned about the lower body, which messes with how I've evaluated with him. They're not so worried about the loop because despite having that dip and draw, that loop to his throwing motion, Darnold still has a pretty quick release, and so that doesn't really impact things so much. It's more that lower body. And you see a lot of videos being posted. They were clearly working on the lower body. It seemed that that got better when we saw him throw out his pro day yesterday. It seemed that the work has been paying off, so that makes me a little bit more optimistic about him, you know, reaching the potential that he has. And so while it usually doesn't matter, I think Darnold's pro day did matter in a sense. I'm not going to, you know, reassess my evaluation of somebody based on a good or a bad pro day. But when you have somebody that needs some work, that didn't throw at the combine, that you haven't seen, you know, throwing since he had the uniform on, you want to see how that work's been going. You want to see if there's been some improvement. It was good to see it yesterday. I think that's just a good sign for Darnold. I'm not wildly changing my grade on him or anything. It was just good to see, and it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable about him getting to where he needs to go.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well then, obviously, with Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen, they have a more clear path to success in the NFL. Do you want to dive a little bit deeper into that?
Sure, and part of that comes from a schematic evaluation. I look at Josh Rosen, and I see perhaps the most schematically diverse quarterback in this class. I think he's basically plug and play. You could draft him, you could put him in a downfield passing game, like what I think the Cleveland Browns will be running, and I think he could run that just fine. I think you could draft him and put him in a West Coast-based offense, like what the Jets will probably be running. I think he can run that offense perfectly. You draft him and put him into an Arnt Perkins time and rhythm-based system, like what I expect the Buffalo Bills to run, I think he could run that just as well. He's accurate, shows good velocity to all levels. I know he has some question marks about how he responds to pressure, some of how the throws that he makes in pressure situations when he has people at his feet, people in his face. And I think he fares pretty well in those situations from what I've seen on tape. Some of the throws that he made, the mistakes that he made when I looked at his interceptions, a lot of them were not really on him. There were route miscommunication issues. There were some drops and things like that. When I put it together, I think he's pretty much the total package here as a quarterback in this group. I know there's also a concern about his inability to escape with his feet, to create plays outside of structure and outside the pocket. But I think that when you watch him, you can see in him something similar to what I see with Tom Brady, which is the ability to sort of move around in the pocket. He's not an incredible athlete, but he can use his feet to slide, to climb, to create enough space to get throws off. And I think that's something he will draw on his background as a tennis player, use that footwork and that understated elusiveness, so to speak, to create plays in the pocket and to extend plays in those situations. He's not going to be, you know, an athlete like Lamar Jackson, but he'll do enough sort of in that Tom Brady vein. And then when you look at Baker Mayfield, I see a path for him, maybe not a schematically diverse quarterback, but I could see a system where he could come in and start pretty much right away. Basically, you know, West Coast air raid mesh type offense, something similar to what the Jets were running last year. I think he could work in a West Coast system as well, like I expect the Jets to run this year. And I think when you look at Baker Mayfield, one of the things that stands out is the competitive toughness angle. And I know I say I'm evaluating these guys based on film, but that's part of it. You know, how they played the position, how people sort of react to them, how they are as a leader on the field from the breaking of the huddle throughout the entire play, over the course of a game, over the course of the season, because that matters so much to play in the position. And You know, that's been part of the learning process for me, evaluating quarterbacks. It's part of the reason I missed on Dak Prescott. While I noted his competitive toughness, I didn't give it enough weight that I should have. And that's what drove him to become a better quarterback, to improve his craft. And that's why the next season, when I noted it with Deshaun Watson, I was so high on him, because I said, look, he's not going to lose. He's going to be a driven kid. He's not going to let his team down. And I see strains of that in Baker Mayfield, and that's why I'm high on him.
Yeah, I always think, too, one of the things we don't get to test for at the combine, or we can't find out of these players, is the heart and the, you know, how much they want to do this. It's such a key component, and that's kind of what you're touching on, but it's very, very hard to measure it. But when the player has that drive, it really makes a huge difference.
And with Baker, it's not that hard to find, in a way, because he, and I've said this before about him, and I'm not making a one-to-one comparison. Let's not go down that road. But, you know, when you think about Tom Brady, you can meet him on the street, and how soon would he tell you that he was drafted in the sixth round? How soon would Tom Brady tell you that he was picked 199? I mean, I've seen interviews over the past couple of years where he's still talking about that when his position in the annals of football history is established. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer, but in his mind, he's still picked 199. It's going to be the same thing with Baker Mayfield. He's a double walk-on. He will always be a walk-on. And Orlando Brown, his left tackle, said this at the combine about him. You will say something about him, and he will find a way to turn it into a chip on his shoulder. The chip on Baker Mayfield's shoulder is massive. And you just know that if he's not picked first overall, he will remember that. And he will hold it against everybody. If he slides to number two, he will hold it against everybody. Even if he's picked number one overall, he will probably find a way to say they took too long to turn in the card. They waited 15 minutes, full minutes, to draft me. That's the kind of guy he is. Ask Lee Corso about it, carrying around the sign that said pretenders, because Lee Corso said that about Oklahoma's football team, that they were pretenders in the preseason. So he was carrying that thing to every single game. That's who he is. He's the guy, the proverbial guy that will cut your throat out if it makes it easier to beat you. So that's why I'm not going to bet against that kid. And he'll probably find the tweet eventually and come after me that I only had him quarterback two, and I fully expect that day to come.
Yeah, and we'll get into the class in a little bit more detail right after this. But first, let me tell you about our friends over at the Fantasy Football Players Championship, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. For most people, it is the off-season, but not for the FFPC. They now have almost 200 active dynasty leagues with entry fees starting at $77, going all the way up to $2,500. And they haven't had a single dynasty league fold in 8 years. So really consistent with the leagues over the years. And that is something that you really want when you're buying into a dynasty league. You want that long-term structure, and you want to have a guarantee that the league is going to be of a high standard. You get that with the FFPC. Plus, if you're ready to draft now, the FFPC Best Ball Leagues are now open, starting from just $35. Entry fee, don't miss out on the FFP experience. Go to myffpc.com and register now. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes football. So, Mark, you know, as we move on here, and there's a lot of guys in this class that we mentioned, it's kind of, there's six guys that we've already talked about. Is there any guys that maybe aren't being talked about that you think, you mentioned guys that could be, you know, that second day, third day talent that has an opportunity in the NFL? Who would be top of your list out of that?
I think, you know, you look at guys that will probably get drafted, I'd say, in that late day two, early day three range. You look at Kyle Lauletta from the University of Richmond, FCS kid that was kind of under the radar. Not a lot of people outside of, say, draft Twitter really knew who he was until about the Senior Bowl. He got the Senior Bowl invite. People like myself who had been studying were curious to see, you know, could the arm strength hold up? Could he play at a faster speed? Because making that FCS jump from the FCS to just the Senior Bowl, let alone going to the NFL, it's a big ask for some guys. But he was one of the standout quarterbacks during the week of practices down in Mobile, and then obviously was Senior Bowl MVP. So Kyle Lauletta is probably in the mix for, you know, that next quarterback after the six guys we've talked about. I think another guy that's impressed throughout the process, a guy that I was a little bit hesitant on when I studied him last summer, but really saw some development from at the process and speed areas, Mike White from Western Kentucky. Now he's probably more in that, you know, mid day three type range, but I think he's a kid that could be schematically diverse. I think he could run a downfield pass and offense. I liked what he did against Middle Tennessee State. It was his final collegiate game, his final regular season collegiate game. They had a complex 3-3-5 defense. They were showing him some different looks up front, a lot of blitzes and stunts that he had to figure out on the fly and he processed information in that game extremely well. Made me feel great about his developmental progress. A name that's been linked to Tom Brady, people have made this comparison. I'm not there, but because people have made it, there's a reason he might even go as high as the second round, and that's Luke Falk, Washington State. Now, Falk played for Mike Leach, air raid system, playing for the Pirate, so he'll face some question marks about the style of offense that he played and whether it can translate. Really smart kid. I like some of the process and speed stuff he showed. Leach put a lot on his plate, basically had him calling plays on his own. He would just tell him, you know, a formation and whether to run or pass, and he had to make the calls in the huddle or at the line of scrimmage. So very smart kid, another senior quarterback. He was playing with a left wrist injury this entire season. Another kid that sort of flew under the radar, but fared pretty well at the Senior Bowl. I know some people down there, Matt Waldman, for example, really liked what they saw from him. So Luke Falk in that mix. A kid that hasn't gotten a ton of attention, but has been linked to the Patriots, I think will get more and more attention. He just had his pro day. Nick Cassero, the, you know, one of the head front office people for the Patriots, was there. And that's Logan Woodside from the University of Toledo, another experienced passer, not going to be running a downfield offense. You know, doesn't have a power arm, but I like what he does in the pocket. I like his footwork. I think he could come in and run most offenses. You're not going to draft him to throw the deep ball all the time, but I think he's an experienced, heady-type quarterback and move around in the pocket well. You saw some shades of a Tom Brady-type pocket mobility in him. So those are some guys that I think later rounds might get some attention. There are some other guys like Tanner Lee from Nebraska, Chase Litton from Marshall, Nick Shimanok from Texas Tech, that are more developmental types. And if you really want to get into the weeds, guys like Chad Knoff from Princeton, Peter Poulos from Holy Cross, Devontae Kincaid from Grambling State, who just had his pro day today. I mean, there are some like real raw developmental types in this group that if you're a team that has the luxury of taking a flyer on a guy, whether it's really late in the draft or as an undrafted free agent, those are some names to sort of keep an eye on as we get into like the real, you know, the end of the draft on that Saturday afternoon or even into the free agency market.
Yeah, and obviously most teams, if they're drafting a quarterback high in the draft, they need that. They're putting in the draft capital to it. So you don't want to put too much draft capital into the quarterback position after that. But we've seen it with RG3 when they took Kirk Cousins with Washington. Sometimes, you know, if you take that little bit of a flyer, maybe from the fourth round onwards and have those two quarterbacks, you know, at least it gives you a chance because you're obviously, that is a key need when you're taking them so high. So there's no harm, I think, sometimes in kind of dropping back in and taking one of those guys, like you mentioned, you know, maybe in the sixth round to try and fill that in. Do you think that would be a smart move for some teams this year who are really in desperate need at the quarterback position?
You know, it's interesting, Colin, because in most years I probably would have said, yeah, we'll see that. But what's been really fascinating in this free agency period is how the teams that we thought were going to have to go attack quarterback in this draft really set themselves up by getting the bridge quarterback. Whether it's, you know, you look at Buffalo Bills and AJ McCarron, whether it's, you know, the Cleveland Browns and Tyrod Taylor, Arizona Cardinals with Glennon and Bradford. You could even make the case that the Broncos with Case Keenum. You know, these were teams we thought might be in the market for a quarterback. They've got that bridge guy. Now, maybe Buffalo might, you know, double dip. They might go quarterback early and then another guy late. You know, maybe they do that. But I think the other teams have pretty much said, look, we'll get an established bridge guy that we can count on to run the show for an entire year if we need to develop the guy we draft at the top of, you know, the first round. And so in most seasons, I would have expected, you know, Cleveland to double dip, for example. Maybe they would have stood pat with DeShone Kizer and double dipped and had three quarterbacks now, two guys in this draft and Kizer. But teams are more approaching it in a different way this offseason, and it's been fascinating to see that happen. I'm very curious to see how it plays out. If these teams that have gotten these bridge guys, if they stick to the plan, if they show the patience and give Tyrod Taylor a full season or AJ McCarron a full season or a Mike Glennon the full season to let the other guy learn behind them.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point when you put it that way. When we look at it, we have talked about Baker Mayfield, we've talked about Darnold, we've talked about Rosen, but then we have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Mason Rudolph. Out of those guys, is there any real clear standout positives or negatives that when you've watched the tape that you think, you know, is going to have the potential for these guys to be either top tier or that you think that they're really more likely going to be a bust?
Well, I mean, we can start with Allen. And what's fascinating about Allen through this entire draft process is he's become, I think, in a way, a victim of the draft industrial complex, so to speak, and that you look at what it was, I guess, you know, last January or so, and you know, he wasn't even potentially going to enter last year's draft, but Matt Miller did a mock draft where he had him in the top five based on stuff he was hearing from the NFL back then. And so he got built up to such a point that when he didn't declare for the draft and people started doing their work on him, you know, over the summer and through the course of the year when he struggled, people, you know, in the sort of draft industrial complex world like myself and others started to point out that the flaws that he had. And it really sort of like he was put in an untenable position, I think. But when you look at him as a quarterback, there are certainly some things that he can do that other guys can't do in this class. There are some things that he can do from an arm strength, from an arm talent, from a velocity standpoint that other guys can't match. They can come close in terms of, say, velocity or something. But, you know, if you need a guy to throw the ball 75 yards downfield, that's your guy. Now, the question becomes, how often do you need that in the National Football League? And not often. I mean, if you look at air yards, I know, you know, Frisco Josh, at Frisco Josh on Twitter, does great work on air yards. I did a piece myself over at Inside the Pylon looking at splits from, you know, all the quarterbacks last year. And, you know, most quarterbacks in terms of a percentage of their overall throws are just throwing the ball 20 yards or more downfield, say 10, 15% of the time. You know, most offenses are running that, you know, 20 and in, 10 and in, sometimes 5 and in range. I mean, Aaron Rodgers attempted 70% of his passes 10 yards or shorter. And so that's where NFL offenses are running. And so when you look at what Josh Allen does best, does it really comport with where NFL offenses are now? And the weaknesses with him are the parts to play in the position that truly matter. Time and anticipation, accuracy, process and speed. He has the arm that can bail him out of jams, but it's his mind and his anticipation or lack thereof that sometimes put him into jams to begin with. And so when you have that sort of double-edged sword of your process gets you into trouble and then you rely on an arm to bail you out and sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't, that could be a sort of recipe for disaster. And so he's going to need that right situation. He's going to need that sort of glide path to really ease him into life in the National Football League, to let him speed up the mind over a course of time. And if he falls to the right team, I would love to see Josh Allen fall to a team like Baltimore, to a team like the Chargers, to a team like the Steelers, or even the Patriots, where he wouldn't have to play right away. And he could start to speed up his mind when it doesn't matter, when it doesn't count. Because if he's forced into action early, I could see it going south for him. So that's Josh Allen. The other two guys, look, I look at Mason Rudolph, and like I said, I think he's got a nice little floor to him. I'm just curious about the ceiling. Every time I watched him, I always almost felt underwhelmed in a sense because I would watch him and I would think, okay, well, this is okay. But I expected to see more. I expected to see more velocity or more aggression or, you know, willing to challenge windows. There are some things that he does really well. He does throw with anticipation, particularly when he sees – say off coverage along the boundaries, timing and rhythm routes like comebacks and out routes on those situations. He does that very well, throws a nice deep ball. You know, I think he's a good quarterback. I'm just wondering about whether he can grow beyond that. And finally, with Lamar Jackson, the main weakness is inconsistency with ball placement. You know, people point to the accuracy numbers and the completion percentage. And there are times when he puts the ball right where it needs to be. There are times when he doesn't. It starts with his feet and his footwork and his lower half, similar to Sam Darnold, where sometimes he has, you know, footwork problems, lower body problems. And with Lamar Jackson, it's his stance. It's sometimes too narrow and compact, which can lead to overstriding, which can impact the release point, which throws everything off. And so I think if he fixes that, it could work, because I could also, similar to Baker Mayfield, see an offense, you know, built around his skill set and him having some success early. I think he's a quarterback in the National Football League. I think he could be a good one. He'll just need to fix that sort of stance and footwork issue that he has right now.
And when we look just before we finish up here at the kind of projections for the draft, obviously the Jets made a trade with the Colts this week, getting the number 3 overall pick off the Colts for their 6th pick, the 37th pick, the 49th pick overall in this year's draft, and then a second rounder in 2019. I think it was a really nice deal for the Colts, but obviously the Jets, if they want to get up in front of the Bills in case they go for the quarterback there. So there's a really interesting dynamic now in that kind of really in the top 4. They could even go further down depending on what moves we see before the draft, but pretty much expected now that 3 quarterbacks will go off the board in those first 4 picks. How do you see it? Do you think that's the way it's going to go? And then, you know, with, we mentioned 6 quarterbacks, is there any of those that you really think could be waiting for a long period of time in that, you know, waiting in the green room, let's say, and waiting to get picked up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a scenario where we see quarterbacks go off the board 1, 2, 3, and 4. I mean, that's not entirely impossible here because, you know, I think everything points to the Browns going Darnold at 1. the question becomes the Giants at two. Do they stay and pick a quarterback? Do they stay and pick another position? Or do they get out of that spot? I mean, I think the Jets have got up as far as they can. I'm not sure the Jets can get even to two from three. They'd have to trade basically their entire draft this year and maybe some pieces even next year to get up just that one spot. And I'm not sure that they would want to do that. I'm not sure they would, you know, pull that off. And so Gettleman's in an interesting position because he doesn't usually trade down. The years he's had first-round picks, he's never traded down. I think, you know, Kevin Cole put that out today. Dan Hammett, who I work with over at Inside the Pylon and the Scouting Academy, told me that as well. You know, he worked with Gettleman. That's who he learned from. He doesn't trade down. He wants to stay there. So, you know, maybe he goes with a Bradley Chubb. Maybe he goes with a Saquon Barkley. Maybe he goes with Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame. Or maybe he surprises everybody and goes quarterback there. But, you know, there's a possibility that quarterback comes off the board at two. For the sake of argument, let's say the Giants stay there. They don't pick a quarterback. You're definitely seeing quarterback at three with the Jets. Whether it's Baker or Rosen, I think those are the two guys they would look to more than anything else. And then Cleveland's back on the clock at four. And you got to think that Denver might be trying to get there. You got to think that Arizona might be trying to get there. Obviously, Buffalo's going to be trying to get there. And so, yeah, I think three quarterbacks, maybe four quarterbacks go off the board in the first five. I think, you know, whoever comes to four to get a quarterback, let's say, you know, for the sake of hypothetical here, say it's Rosen at three to the Jets, that'll be Baker at four, and we'll say it's the Bills there. And then five, Denver, they're on the clock. Maybe John Elway does it again. Maybe he says, look, I'm going to go get a big guy. Give me Josh Allen. So I think that's how it might play out. Again, this will all change over the next couple of weeks. I think the guy that would probably slide, it would be Lamar Jackson, because I do think there are those question marks about his ability to transition to the National Football League. I don't have questions about it. Others do. And the fact that, you know, we've heard during the run-up to the combine, during the run-up to the draft process, about the question marks about him playing the position, whether he'd run the 40, whether he should be a wide receiver, there will be some teams that might shy away from him early in the draft. So he might be the guy to slide. Maybe Mason Rudolph even comes off the board before Lamar Jackson. But if Lamar Jackson slides to the end of that first round, a team's going to be able to pick him up. It'll be a great spot for him, and he could end up being a steal late in the first, maybe early in the second.
Lots of great stuff there, Mark. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Again, for the listeners, if you aren't following Mark on Twitter, go to @MarkSchofield. That is S-C-H-O-F-I-E-L-D. And of course, check out the great work with him and the team at InsideThePylon.com. It's been a fun show to do today, looking into the quarterback prospects heading into this class. We'll be looking through the different position groups as we move through the series. We'll have the running backs, wide receivers. We'll be doing some more quarterback looking in depth there, and we have some great guests coming up like Matt Waldman, Matt Friedman, to round out the trio of Matts. We have Matt Harmon as well, so we have a lot of Matts coming on and a lot of good guests coming up. And of course, check out Matt Harmon's series where he's talking with all the beat reporters about the upcoming draft as well and individual team needs. It's been a fascinating listen so far. So a lot of good draft content coming up here on RotoViz Radio. Make sure you check out the great work too up on RotoViz.com. And make sure, as I mentioned earlier, get yourself that 30% off by heading on over to RotoViz.com/podcast. Just for being a podcast listener, so a nice little bonus right there. My name's Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. Hopefully you'll be back for the next edition of the show. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz NFL Draft Series. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.